So when was your last checkup? Oh no, not you. Although that's important too, but when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule an appointment today.
But I want to talk first about contact tracing. We heard a lot about it in the governor's news conference on Friday that they're trying to ramp this up and with remarkable speed. So here's the deal. It's trying to figure out if you've had it, who you've been in touch with. And so there is this process of going through literally everyone you spent time with, everyone you might have interacted with, and anyone who potentially could be impacted so that you can go back and talk with them and let them know they may be at risk. So here's the deal, though. You need 30 contact tracers per 100,000 people. In Illinois, that means nearly 4,000 contact tracers, interviewers, people who are just got to get up and running and make things move as fast as possible in terms of collecting that data. So they're working to get that done. But let's talk more about this with someone who knows quite a bit about it. Howard Brown Health is where he is. Dr. Schneider is an infectious disease specialist, virus detective. I thought that was a word. Those are other words I haven't heard before as well. But you've been doing this for a long time as it relates to the spread of HIV and AIDS, and so have some experience in this area. Doctor, thanks for being on WGN.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Schneider, you're one of the few people I know who really kind of understands this and knows how it's been done and has, you know, actual, you know, experience doing it. Tell us what some things we should know about it.
Yeah, it is, like you just mentioned, it's kind of a laborious process, needs a lot of human work to do. It's going okay right now because a lot of people are shelter in place. And so when we're calling people who've tested positive, there's only a few people potentially in their household that may have been exposed. But I can see as things start to loosen up and people get a little more mobile, it can get a little more complicated and a lot more work involved.
Well, it was kind of complicated for you because when you were doing it or have been doing it in the past, my understanding would be that people weren't in quarantine if it was relating to the HIV and AIDS situation, that you wouldn't have, those people would have had also a difficult time potentially identifying who they might have had contact with, unless it's just sexual relationships that I guess potentially would matter there.
Yeah, that's right. So HIV and syphilis was a little different because it was sexual contacts and people were a little better at remembering that and those were clear events. Whereas this, it could be, I have lunch with so-and-so or I was at a wedding or, you know, things like that before the shelter and home play took place. But yeah, now it's, you know, we think of significant exposures, you know, if you've been in contact with somebody for, you know, regular and routine contact over, you know, half hour, more than that, that's when we start to isolate those contacts.
So is that something to be conscious of? Is it regular contact where it really causes this to spread? I mean, passing in the grocery store, is that less of a risk for that? I mean, I've heard of different viral loads you've been exposed to. I don't know if that matters. Can you explain some of that for us?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of this is debated still to some extent, but yeah, we don't think that, you know, passing someone in a grocery store or passing in someone's space where someone has been who may have been infected is really a significant exposure. When we look at the people who are getting coronavirus, they clearly have someone close to them that has been symptomatic, you know, usually coughing, you know, has, you know, other symptoms, and they've been in regular and routine contact with them. So when we look at our households, you know, 75% of the household usually gets infected if someone is infected, and that's because they're having close regular contact. But there's also, you know, one person, say there's a family of four, there's one person who sometimes is not. So we don't really have a good explanation for that other than, you know, they've lucked out or maybe they were, you know, kind of being a little further away from the others in the household. But when we're talking about contact tracing, I am not going to be talking about, you know, I went on a jog and I passed by, you know, dozens of people and I was breathing hard and, you know, I may have come in contact with them. That's not who we're really looking after. When we looked at the first few cases that came into Howard Brown in early in March, these were people that, you know, were at, you know, playing cards regularly, or they were, you know, at a group, you know, wine tasting or, you know, things like that. And so those are the sorts of people that we're going to be focusing on for contact tracing.
All right, so not the person who checked you out of the grocery store or nothing like that. It's going to be more of a sustained sort of contact. That makes a lot more sense. And I feel like, because at first it seemed like an arduous enough of a task to go through everyone you potentially had contact with if symptoms don't develop for a while, but I guess it narrows down more substantially as you put those kinds of conditions on it. However, when things start to reopen, that gets tougher.
It does. It does. And, you know, even where we are right now, I mean, so we've been doing this since at Howard Brown since the middle of March. And, you know, we're marching through about, you know, 500 people that we've diagnosed at our various health clinics across the city and our drop-in community centers. And each of those 500 invariably have, you know, 2 to 5 close contacts, even in this shelter-at-home sort of order. And so that's a lot. That quickly goes to 1,500. And, you know, we probably have been getting in contact with a half, you know, a third to a half of those people. A lot of people also want to do it themselves and say, okay, I'll just let my mom know and she can come in the Howard Brown and get tested. So we don't have, we don't contact everybody. We can do it through proxy, but we do prefer contacting people because we can dispel some of the misinformation. We can provide support, social support, and we can also give them important information about where they get tested.
Doctor, just a couple seconds here, but I do want to get this in. A question from a listener that I'm a delivery driver, he says. I'm a package delivery driver. Is it advisable for me to wear gloves as well? I already wear a mask. Do you wear gloves?
So gloves are important just because if you're wearing gloves, you're less likely to like rub your nose or kind of scratch your face or rub your eyes. And so, yeah, I do recommend gloves, but not because it's like a germ thing, like, you know, I'm touching different surfaces, but it's more also to protect you from kind of rubbing your face.
All right. That helps a lot. Thanks for the explanations. Appreciate it. Dr. John Schneider, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. He's the 55th Street Medical Director, Howard Brown Health. It's affiliated with the University of Chicago.